Last Sunday morning, I began a series of messages that I'm calling Addiction and Grace. And some of you will recall that this last Sunday morning, I began to share how over a long period of time, I have gradually become aware that I am an addict. I'm an addict of a variety of different things. I became aware of many of my addictions thanks to a group of people in recovery that I've known over the years, people mostly in programs like Alcoholics Anonymous. And in my conversations with some of those people, I've begun to notice similarities, commonalities between their experience and my own, and began to realize that I had more in common with them than I ever would have imagined. You might be an addict if... Well, take a look at this first photo up here. You might be an addict if you lick the coffee off of the coffee cup. You might be an addict if you sit on the toilet to work on the computer. Yeah. You might be addicted even if you're feline. And I don't know if you can read this or not. The cat is saying, I started out with a little scratching on the couch, then I totally lost control. This last Sunday, I introduced the theme of addiction and grace, and I introduced a very important word that I want to return to as we get started this morning. The word is attachment, a very, very important word when thinking about addiction and grace. Now, some of you remember the last Sunday morning I told the story, the ancient story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and I suggested that one of the ways of reading that story is from a perspective of how our addictions develop. And you remember, in that story, Eve had this longing for God that was met by God's presence and power at work in the garden, this homing instinct that directed her to God and to God's call in her life. And for the first time, you remember, when the serpent said to her, did God really say that you should not eat from the trees of the garden? If you eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will not really die. For the first time, Eve's desire for God was redirected to something else. And she saw the fruit in the tree, and she longed for something other than what her homing instinct was telling her, her longing for God and for God's vocation, God's call in her life. And last week we talked about attachments as those things to which our longing, our desire becomes attached. And you remember last Sunday I told you that the word attachment comes from a French word which means to be nailed to. It's a powerful word. Our desires that get nailed to any of thousands of things that take us off in the wrong directions. Back in the 1980s, there was a psychiatrist by the name of Gerald May who did a great deal of research on addictions, and he did some conferences in various places in which he asked people, after presenting this teaching about attachments, he asked people to name some of their attachments, and there are dozens and dozens. I'm going to name just a handful of them. People in his conferences named approval as something that they were attached to, nailed to, being loved, being nice, candy, cars, drinking, eating, exercise, gambling, gardening, hair twisting, humor, money, performance, politics, responsibility, sex, soft drinks, sports. The list went on and on and on and on. And it might be as you listen to some of those things, you think to yourself, well, a lot of those things are really good. A lot of those things are beautiful. And of course, that is true. But what makes them attachments, which eventually can become addictions, is that those people who named them had lost control. They were things to which their longing and desire had gotten nailed. And instead of being something for which they are grateful and could let go of, they became things that were controlling and that turned their desires in the wrong direction. Last Sunday morning, I suggested that our addictions are a problem because they tack our longings and desire for God and God's calling on our lives to other things. So instead of our energies being available for the love of God and the love of neighbor, which is what we're all called to be about, Instead of being free for love, we are attached, we are nailed to these thousands of different desires, and we are no longer free. And this morning, this last Sunday morning, by way of review, I also suggested that the goal of this series of sermons is going to be people who are becoming free. We're not going to, in 8 weeks, we're not going to suddenly all be absolutely free. But my hope is that in this journey together, we will take some steps in the right direction, that we will be people who are becoming free. This morning, I want to take what could be an uncomfortable turn. Ron, if you would pull up this next slide. This morning, I want to speak about why religion doesn't work. In this business of developing attachments, things to which our desire is nailed, which become controlling to us, which, when they become habitual over a period of time and we desire more and more and more of them and they're never satisfying, when they become addictions, full-blown addictions, this morning I want to suggest that before our addictions, religion simply doesn't work. And I recognize the irony here. This is a little bit like going to Walmart and seeing a great big sign up in front of Walmart that says, "Why consuming our products won't make you happy." There's a little irony here, isn't there? We are, after all, gathered together in a sanctuary of Christian worship. There's a steeple outside here that points to everybody in town that this is a religious house. We have crosses hanging in our buildings. We have stained glass windows. I don't think if you interviewed anybody in town that they would have any trouble whatsoever recognizing that this is a house of worship, that this is a place where religion happens. We took an offering this morning. We support religious programs. Folks, we are practicing religion this morning. And here I am, standing in front of you with the gall to suggest that religion isn't going to make us free. Let me begin by offering this definition or this suggestion of what I mean by religion. When I'm speaking of religion this morning, I'm talking about our efforts to have God in our lives. That's all. I'm just talking about our efforts to have God in our lives, and I want to propose to you this morning that they will not make us free. I've come to this conclusion reluctantly. I want to begin with my own observations this morning. I've come to this conclusion reluctantly. I told you last week that I've been privileged over the years to know a number of people who are in recovery, most of them from alcoholism. I remember the first one that I met, her name was Sheila, and I remember I met her when I was in college. We worked in campus life together, and I remember one day when Sheila invited me to go with her to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I said, "What do you need that for?" And Sheila said, "Well, I am a recovering alcoholic." And I need to be honest with you about my first blush reaction to her telling me that she was an alcoholic. I remember thinking, if you would just try, and if you would just have what I have, a relationship with God, then you wouldn't need to worry about that. And I remember going with Sheila to this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting very reluctantly. She asked me several times before I finally agreed. And I remember walking down into this dank basement in this Methodist church in Portland, Oregon. The moment we walked into the doors of this basement, there was cigarette smoke that was pouring out, which just added more fuel to the fire of my judgmentalism as I walked down and I sat down with these people. But it was that night that I began to hear people telling stories like this. I began hearing people in recovery say things like, "Well, I grew up in the church," and you could fill in the blank. They could say, "I grew up in the Baptist church, or the Catholic church, or the Episcopal church, or the Lutheran church, or the Church of God." I've heard the story told in so many different forms. "I grew up in the church, but what I got there really didn't help me." The story has a variety of twists and turns, depending on the person you talk to. Many of them will describe the process they went through, how they became full-blown alcoholics, how after a season of time they realized that they needed to help and they needed to be on a path of transformation. And what many of their stories have in common is that religion didn't help. I've come to this conclusion reluctantly. I've also come to the conclusion reluctantly that there is an elephant in the room in our houses of worship. I mentioned this last Sunday morning, but I believe it. We speak about addiction as though it is something that happens out there in the world and out there in the culture, and we have certain unacceptable addictions that we in the church would never admit to one another, though I should say statistics tell us that they are as present within the church as they are outside of it. But then there are also all of the so-called acceptable addictions that are welcome in our houses of worship, the things that we will wink at and nod at and pretend as though they don't really matter. So in our churches, we can be tremendously judgmental of drug addicts and alcoholics and gamblers and sex addicts, while we ourselves are addicted to overeating and to success and to doing the things that make other people like us. I've reluctantly come to the conclusion that there's an elephant in the room in our houses of worship. And then, those are my own observations. Ouch, there are the observations of others. I don't know if you've noticed it, but we have some very strong critics in our culture these days. The days when most people were religious and the critics were very small have turned. And now, many, many people in America are no longer participating in churches in any way, and the numbers of our critics have grown tremendously. I don't know if you've noticed. There's a large crowd of people now who are saying that the source of much of the evil in the world is religion. Have you heard them? There are folks who are saying, go back and look at what happened on September 11, 2001, and you will see that the source of that evil was religion. And maybe those of us who are here this morning, we will say, wait. That may be true, but those were Muslims, not Christians. Then our critics may say to us, yeah, but maybe you need to take a closer look at your own tradition. You know, it was Christians who started the Crusades, and it was Christians who converted Indians in Native Americans here in America at the edge of the sword if they would not convert to Christianity, and they put many of them to death. And it is Christians who have been responsible for much of the violence that has taken place in the Western world. And maybe we want to draw back a little bit and say to our critics, okay, but those people didn't behave like the people of God. And then, ouch. We have to look at the critique of our own scriptures. Would you look again at these words from Moses? From Amos. This is the word of the Lord speaking through the prophet Amos. This is God speaking about the worship of God's people. God says, I despise your religious festivals. Your assemblies are, can you believe this? The word of the Lord. Your assemblies are a stench to me. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, the order of worship that was acceptable in this day, even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. This is the word of the Lord to Amos, to the people of God. So perhaps we draw back and we say, oh, wait a minute. That's the Old Testament. Come on, lighten up a little bit. This is God speaking to the Jews. This isn't God speaking in the New Testament. And then, ouch, we come across the words of Jesus. Woe to you, Jesus says, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they're full of greed and self-indulgence. In other words, on the outside you look really good, but on the inside you're full of greed and self-indulgence. And we hear these words of our Lord and we say, okay, that's cutting a little bit closer to home, but that's speaking to the Pharisees. They're still the Jews. That's not speaking to the Christians. And then we come across these words of Paul to the Galatians. You foolish Galatians. These are people who had accepted Jesus as Lord. Who has bewitched you? Before your very eyes, Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. Pretty soon, we discovered that we are backed into the corner by the criticisms of our culture and our own scripture. Now, let me offer again this definition of religion that I want to be working with this morning, as I'm speaking about why religion doesn't work. Ron, if you'd pull this back up here. I'm speaking about our efforts to have God in our lives. I'm talking about what we do as an act of our willpower. I'm talking about our efforts to have God in our lives. I'm talking about what we do to have God in our lives. Notice in the way that I'm describing that we are still in control. Our efforts to have God in our lives. Remember the story of Adam and Eve that we started with last Sunday and that I referred to a couple of minutes ago? Remember, I suggested last Sunday that Eve, whose desire was for God and whose desire was met in the garden, whose desire was for God's call upon her, that she was enticed by this tree because now this thing is under her control, where God is not. Before God, let's say, we are never, ever, ever, ever in control. But before the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, now there's something to which my desires can be attached and nailed to. There's something that I can control. I decide when I go to the tree. I decide when I get what I want. I decide how to get my needs for approval met. I decide when I want to go to my drug. I decide where and how I want to get my needs for acceptance and approval met. I am in control. And I'm suggesting this morning is religion is what we do to have God in our lives. We are in control. You know you're dealing with religion when everybody's obsessed about getting the doctrine and the theology exactly right. We're going to get our creed, and we're going to get our creed memorized, every last line and jot and tittle of it. Friends, I have known people who are attached to theology. I mean absolutely, positively addicted. People who read it and read it and read it and read it and read it, and they have their box of beliefs so perfectly defined, they could win any argument with any person on the planet on any given day. They are absolutely, positively in control. We know that we're dealing with religion when we are obsessed and certain about who is in and who is not. You know, the folks in the Church of God were the ones on the inside of the circle. We know who's in the circle and who isn't. We know who's on their way to heaven and who isn't. We know the names of the people who belong and the names of the people who don't. We have managed to decipher, to cut out all mystery. Now we know. Just ask us, we can name them, who's in and who's out. We know that we're dealing with religion when it attaches judgmentalism like fleas. You know, we're the first Church of God, the one on a little bit Superior Street. And you know you're dealing with religion when judgmentalism is just attracted. Have you seen those people? Seen the way they live? Have you noticed that those people never go to church on Sunday mornings? Look at them. They're out playing golf instead of going to church on Sunday mornings. You know you're dealing with religion when the right folks have gathered at the right time in order to cast the right condescension on those who are not there. You know you're dealing with religion when you're obsessed with outward appearances and external realities. We look right. We get the actions right. We get the practices right. We do the disciplines right. We read the Bible right. We go to church right. And all of this has to do with the outside of the cup and not what's going on the inside. Just in case this is feeling a little bit too direct, let me ask you to look at this little slide up here. I kind of resonated with this week. This is the pastor with his arm around the guest speaker. He says, several of you have commented that my preaching style is too direct, so I've invited Brother Brimstone here to preach this morning. So you'll have a good basis for comparison. Friends, this morning I want to suggest that the problem with religion is that it is one more attachment to which our desires can become nailed that is not directed to the love of God and to the love of our neighbor. I want to suggest this morning that our religion is one more attachment to which our homing instincts to the living God become nailed. Only now, they are nailed in a way that we name God who is not God, where we are nailed to all of our little idolatries and all the things that we call God that are not God, those things over which we have control. We become attached to the hour that we go to worship. We become attached to the time that we read the Bible. We become attached to when we go. We become attached to the number of times that we go to church. We become attached to the number of deeds that we do on a given week. And in all of these things, we are not free to love God and to love our neighbor. A minute ago, I read from Galatians that passage when Paul said to the Galatians, "Oh, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you?" Let me tell you their story. These were people who had heard the gospel of Jesus, and it is very clear from Paul's letter to the Galatians that they had become free. They had experienced the Spirit, and they'd experienced the power of God working and moving in their lives. And then at some later time, after this initial explosion of freedom and the movement of the Spirit in their lives, there were a group of people who had come into Galatia, and they had begun saying, "Okay, now that you have had this freedom in Jesus, we want you to add certain things to it. We want you to add all the men should become circumcised to become like the Jewish people." And by the way, I've always thought they could have found something much simpler than that. We want you to become committed to the religious festivals and the times when we worship. We want you to come committed to all of the externals of the Jewish religion. And folks, the problem wasn't that they were Jewish prescriptions and Jewish laws and Jewish regulations. The problem was they were attaching their longing for the homing instinct for God, the living God, they were attaching them to religious practices, religious ceremonies, religious ideas, religious doctrine. And it happens in churches, and it happens to Christians. Please allow me to say the obvious now. You know where I'm going already, don't you? We don't need religion. We do not need religion. Religion does not make us free. We need a journey of transformation. We need a path of renewal. We need a way that leads to life. Earlier this morning, I've told you about some people who, along the way, persuaded me that religion doesn't work. People who were in Alcoholics Anonymous programs that I've known over the years. One of the things that these people have in common that I've learned as I've listened to them is they speak of Alcoholics Anonymous as a way of transformation, a journey toward renewal and toward healing. They don't speak of it as a body of doctrine or body of knowledge. They don't speak of it as a religious grouping. They talk about it rather as a way, a journey, a path of renewal and transformation. And folks, the wonderful news that I want to announce to you is that this is our language. This is our message. It was our message long before it was the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen again, would you please, to Romans chapter 12, verse 2, this well-known verse that Carolyn read for us a little while ago. Paul said to the Romans, "Do not conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." Be transformed, Paul said, by the renewing of your minds. Be transformed. The early church saw their way as a way of transformation, not a body of knowledge, not a body of doctrine, not a body of theology or a place where you go. The early church saw their journey as a way of transformation. They heard the words of Jesus who said, "I am the way." Did you notice? "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me." I've heard that verse hundreds of times in my life, and the emphasis is always on the last part. No one comes to the Father except by me. And I've hardly ever heard anyone speak about the first part. I'm the way. It's a journey, folks. And Jesus is the journey with whom we walk. Did you know that the earliest title for the church in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, the earliest name that was given to the church was not Presbyterian or Lutheran or Church of God or Catholic or Episcopal. The earliest name that was given to the church was so extraordinarily simple. They were called simply the way. Why? because it was so obvious to anyone who watched them that they were on a journey of transformation. They were the way. And the first invitation to faith in the New Testament is not an invitation to believe the right things, to line up the right doctrine, to get all of our theology just right so we'll win our arguments with the Jews or with the Muslims or anybody else. The first invitation to faith in the New Testament is the words of Jesus. Follow me. Follow me. Do you hear? It is a journey. It is a way. It is a path of transformation. And the source of the transformation that we are looking for is not religion, our efforts to have God in our lives. The source of that transformation, I'm going to be suggesting in the weeks to come, is grace. I'm going to be suggesting that it is a way of surrender, not the way of our work, although our involvement is absolutely crucial. I'm going to be suggesting that it is a surrender to the unfettered forgiveness and goodness and kindness of God. I'm going to be suggesting in the weeks to come that it is responding to God's movement in our lives, not our efforts to have God. I'm going to be suggesting that we are never, ever, ever in control of this God, but rather God is always moving to us, and that our task is to set the sails of our boat so that we are moving along at the vibration and frequency of the Spirit. I'm going to be suggesting in the weeks to come that we are surrendered to the grace of God, cooperating with the power of God, beginning to learn how to let go of all of those nasty attachments to which our desire has been nailed, and to loosen our grip. I'm going to be suggesting in the weeks to come that we know that we're making some treadway in the way of grace when we're learning to appreciate the gifts that come our way without having to have them. That we can become like Paul, to be content in plenty and to be content in times of want, because we don't have to have what we want when we want it. Now, I'm going to be saying a lot more about this in the weeks to come. But this morning, I want to simply point you to the cross in a slightly different way. I want to ask you to think with me about the cross, maybe in slightly different terminology than you have before. We're not the first generation of people to have hundreds and hundreds of attachments, places that our desires get nailed, and then those things that we are no longer in control of, but in time they take control of us, and over a period of time, when they become habitual and we need more and more of them, they're just full-blown addictions. We're not the first people to experience this. In the world in which Jesus lived, there were people who were nailed to all kinds of attachments as well. They were nailed to attachments to power. They were nailed to attachments of religion. There were many, many, many people who were nailed, just like in our day, to attachments to politics. And you can bet they knew that they were right all of the time. There were people who were attached to their needs for security and their ways of getting their security met. In the world of Jesus, it was no different than ours. Many, I believe, all people who were attached to those things that do not bring life. And along comes Jesus, and Jesus begins preaching the message of the good news of the kingdom. He begins preaching the message of liberation through the reign of God. He begins preaching this message that we are not in control, but that God is moving and working in our lives and that God wants to make us free. And as is true in the world at any time, when we become aware of significant, powerful, real change, it's terribly, terribly, terribly uncomfortable for all of us. And the world in which Jesus lived became very quickly terribly uncomfortable with his message of transformation and renewal and change and God making all things new through his life and ministry. And it wasn't long before all of these folks with their attachments to which they were nailed began to turn on Jesus, because this is uncomfortable stuff, this message of real substantive change. And in what I want to describe this morning as the greatest transformation in all of history, I want to suggest to you that what took place on the cross is that these men and women and children who were themselves nailed to thousands of different things, they themselves nailed Jesus Christ himself to the cross. And now, all of their attachments, all of their sin, all of their addiction, all of their brokenness, all of it is attached to Jesus himself. Now, I want you to listen to the words of Jesus from the cross. Father, forgive them. They don't understand what they're doing. They didn't, and neither do we. But I want you to listen now to the words of Paul to the Romans. Paul said to the Romans, God made him who knew no sin to become sin on our behalf. God made him who was not attached to anything except for God the Father to take on all of our attachments on our behalf. Friends, this is grace. And it is that toward which you are invited now. Would you listen to Paul's words to the Galatians? It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then and do not let yourself be burdened again by a yoke of slavery. For in Christ neither circumcision nor uncircumcision has any value. The only thing that counts, would you say this last line with me, please? The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. We're on a journey to be people who are becoming free. This morning I want to invite you to respond in a couple of different ways. It might be that you just want to pray quietly this morning as Ron and our worship leaders come forward to lead us in just a moment. If you do, I want to invite you to just come to one of these two altars. If you would like to just come and kneel and pray, maybe you're aware of some attachment that you just want to begin to confess to God and to open your heart to God's grace over which you are not in control to be at work in your life. If you want to pray alone, I just want to invite you to these two altars right here, the ones on your right. If you'd like to pray with someone and to be anointed this morning, I want to invite you to this altar, the large altar, the one on the left. If you want to just come forward and be prayed and anointed. Anointing, the oil is a symbol of the presence of the Spirit, God's gift of grace to us. If you'd like to pray with someone and be anointed, I invite you to this altar on the left, the large one. But there's one other station over here that I want to invite you to starting this morning. There's a cross over here, and on the cross, there is a little postcard that says, bring it, with all the things that we're bringing. I'd like to invite you to turn that around if you'd like to respond this way. Just turn it around. There are also some pins up there. And this morning, I want to invite you to just begin writing your attachments down, those things that you're aware of, those places to which you have been nailed, from which you are not free. And then turn it back around so that this side of the card is facing forward and nail it to the cross. Later, when we don't have any idea who put these here, we're going to be able to turn them around our pastoral staff and just read some of the ways that our people in our congregation are committing to becoming free. You'll just simply take this right on the back side of it and then nail it with one of these up here on the cross. I invite you to respond that way. So there are these three possibilities. If you want to just pray alone, if you want to pray with someone and be anointed, if you'd like to come and write down your attachments and to attach them to the cross, the place of grace. Ron and worship team, would you come and lead us? And I invite you to respond as you're led this morning.